Hey everyone, I'm Sarah, and this is the It's Fine, I'm Fine podcast. Okay, let's try to record this for the millionth time. You are definitely wondering where Liz is in this podcast right now and on the cover of the logo and everything. Don't worry, Liz and I are still besties. Liz and I had a long conversation about this podcast and, you know, kind of like what we wanted to do with it moving forward, because we've been doing this together since September of 2019. And in September of 2019, our lives looked completely different. Both of us had different jobs. We just had different lives. Like, we were younger, and at the time, having a podcast was really more of a fun side hobby. And you know what? It still is. But I think at this point, we've both grown a lot in our lives, in our careers, in, you know, the world has changed a lot. The way that people receive podcasts has changed a lot. The way that people respond to podcasters has changed a lot. And I won't lie, it's very, very scary. And that's not why she's not doing it. We just really both honestly didn't have the time for it for a while, which is why we took a break for a few months. When you're doing something as a side hobby, in addition to your work hours and your life, it can get really taxing and can start to feel like, why am I doing this? And, you know, Liz, obviously, if you follow Liz, which everyone should, she has a passion in Kardashian talk, pop culture talk, sharing news, and she's really, really good at it. And so that passion kind of took priority over this. I don't want to speak for her, but that's just what I gathered. And listen, we're still besties. We literally hung out last night. But, you know, sometimes people just need to take the right steps for themselves. I personally, Sarah, was thinking to myself, what do I want to do? Do I want to close the chapter on this as well, or do I want to keep going? And, you know, it is really hard when you have major imposter syndrome to ask yourself, do I want to do this by myself? I literally am convinced that, like, no one will listen to this and everyone's going to be like, boo, you suck. But the thing that really encouraged me to just try and do it on my own is because I know that doing this podcast brings me a fulfillment and helps me feel like I'm contributing to the mental health conversation. And I don't want to lose that. And it's that kind of sounds selfish, but it really isn't. It is about other people, and I want to help other people. And I don't feel that with my current career path or even the things I do outside of work, I don't feel like I'm really helping other people, like, on a day-to-day basis. And it can kind of suck the life out of you when you don't feel like you're helping other people. So, I mean, that's just how I feel. And so doing this podcast is just my way of trying to help others. If it helps just one person, I think that's enough. So I'm going to have a lot of guests on, which I'm really excited for. I have really exciting guests coming on the podcast, starting with Danielle Feinberg, also known as Redefining Healthy on Instagram. She is a registered dietitian, and I've met Danielle actually through Core Power Yoga, which is where I teach yoga, and she also teaches yoga. And I used to take her classes with my friends. She's amazing. And I ended up doing her nutrition program, which lasted several months, and I think it was 5 months, maybe 4 months. And it was a weekly program where I met with Danielle and four other girls over Zoom, and we just would start off the session by discussing how we felt that week regarding nutrition and food and just overall well-being. And then Danielle would cover a topic about nutrition or movement or, you know, myth-busting in this industry. And it was really, really incredible. And I would really suggest it to anyone who is thinking about seeing a nutritionist. Honestly, doing the group program from a financial perspective was better for me. But either way, solo or in a group, it's amazing. I had other girls to lean on, and we all just kind of supported each other as we were learning about nutrition and our own well-being. So lots to say about that. But today's topic is, oh my gosh, should I still do Peak and Pit of the Week? I'm like, you're hearing this live. I guess I will. You know, why not? Liz, this one's for you. Okay, peak and pit of the week. So I'm going to start with my pit. My pit of the week was classic. Didn't think about this before I did it. Okay, let me pause. Okay, hi. Obviously, nothing much has changed with me, and my pit of the week was learning that, you know, there's just a bit more distance between me and one of my closest friends than I thought there was, and that's kind of vague, but I really have to leave it at that. But the point is like, it's always hard for me to come to terms with the fact that, like, friendships ebb and flow and change over time. And that's really hard for me because I hate losing things and people, as everyone knows. So that was tough. But my peak was last night, Liz, her fiance Chris, who's also my friend, and me, I keep Shabbat, so my phone's off Friday night to Saturday night. And we made a plan to meet at my apartment at 3:30, and they came over and we just hung out. And then when Shabbat ended, we watched a Sebastian Maniscalco comedy special on Netflix, and we were cracking up and we got pizza and it was just really fun. So yeah, overall great time together, and it was really fun. It was really nice to you know, be with them and have a good time. Okay, so today's episode, I did kind of touch on Danielle a little bit, but just to reiterate, Danielle is a registered dietitian. She's amazing. And I think that when it comes to mental health, be more confident, Sarah, there are so many connections between nutrition and what you put in your body and mental health, or what you don't put in your body and mental health. Of course, I know that this conversation and this topic might be triggering to some people, so I just want you to proceed with caution. I hope that you listen and you enjoy, and thanks for being here with me if you're listening, and I will talk to you later. Hey Danielle, what's going on?
Hi, thanks so much for having me here. I'm so excited.
Yeah, of course. So happy to have you. I obviously set this up at the beginning of the episode, but just as a refresher, Danielle and I met at Core Power Yoga, and Danielle is a registered dietitian, which you will tell us more about. Oh my gosh, this is so weird. I haven't recorded an episode in so long, but yeah, I think that there's like so much to say about food and nutrition and mental health. And I think that a lot of people might not realize how connected the two are. And I didn't really realize that until I did your nutrition program, which we'll talk more about. But I guess just to start off, like, can you tell me what you do, how you got into it, and like, how did you know you wanted to do this?
Yeah. So it's actually a really funny story, because in college, all my friends made fun of me because I was the girl who switched her major like 47 times. Like every day I had like a new career path that I was going to do, like anywhere from being a lawyer to a nurse to a therapist, like all over the mark. Like I pretty much tried out everything. But I really did like psychology. So like I tried like marketing and any things that involved psychology. And then my junior year of college, I got really into cooking. So I started to be more interested in about what I was cooking and what I was putting into my body. And I found that there was actually such a big connection between nutrition and mental health from so many different perspectives. And I thought it was a great way to be able to blend kind of all the passions that I liked into one. Like I really liked fitness. I liked cooking, liked food. I liked therapy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all the stars kind of aligned and pointed me in the direction of being a dietitian.
That's awesome. So you studied nutrition, and then like, what does your life look like now? Do you have private practice? Like, how does it work?
I actually don't know. Like, even though we did
this whole nutrition program, I don't really know how it works.
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually didn't, I studied, there was no nutrition major at my college, so I didn't really study at undergrad. I did a public health undergrad. And then I actually started in marketing NPR and kind of left nutrition on the back burner. I was like, maybe I'll do it as, you know, a side hustle, or, you know, go back to it later. And then I realized after a year of, you know, being done with college that I really did want to pursue dietetics full time. And I went back to school and I got my master's at Columbia in nutrition. And then I did my dietetic internship, which is basically like a residency. You have to do 1200 hours in various nutrition settings, a hospital, private practice, a nursing home, food service, just like other, you know, just getting the whole spectrum of what dietitians can do. And then once you have your 1200 hours, you can sit for your licensing exam to become a registered dietitian. So that's, you know, how that's the schooling path that led me to be a dietitian. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I started working in private practice. So I mainly work on relationships with food. That's a big piece of what I do as a dietitian. Mm-hmm. I help, you know, other people manage disease states with nutrition and things like that. But I always feel like there's such an underlying message of mental health and your mindset around nutrition, even if, you know, you're just coming to me because you have a certain disease state that you want to, you know, focus on your healing with your nutrition. There is still so much mindset. You can't ignore mental health. It gets interwoven into anything. Even I work with a lot of people who have digestive issues, and mental health plays a big role in it because anxiety can make their food issues worse. So they might think they're sensitive to, you know, all these different foods, but when we change how they're eating and their thoughts and, you know, lower their stress levels, they're actually realizing that they can eat a lot more food, that it's, you know, not necessarily the gluten and dairy. It's the high level of stress, rushing around, skipping meals, and, you know, skipping sleep to go do HIIT workouts. That's really, you know, exacerbating a lot of their digestive issues.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. This actually, like it's every time we speak, because, you know, just so the listeners know, which I kind of touched on, but I did your nutrition program, and it was kind of like a group program where week by week we would learn about different parts of nutrition. And like, I didn't realize how much of it was going to be mental health based. Like I kind of went, this is going to sound horrible, but I think it's important for me to say this because I think other people might feel the same way going into a program like this. And I kind of want to like clear the myth, I guess. I don't know how to even say that. But the point is like, I went into your program, honestly, like being truthful, I was like, I'm going to learn how to eat perfectly so that I can like look a certain way. And I came out of it with like way more of a good relationship with food from like a mental health perspective. Like it was more of a mindset shift than it was like a physical shift in my body. And I think for me, that was like so surprising because I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, I'm going to do a nutrition program and then I'm going to come out of it. And like, all I'm going to do is eat vegetables and it's going to be like so cool how easy it's going to be because I'm going to do this program. And like week after week, I'll learn how to just eat like healthy. And it ended up being like myth busting every single week about what I thought about nutrition and then like what the reality was. And I think you do such a good job of that on your Instagram. Like everyone follow Danielle, which we'll plug you at the end, but you're just so good at reiterating like what society tells us we should think about certain foods and like ways that we should view foods. And then being like, nutrition actually has little to do with, I mean, of course you want to like fill your body with foods that give you energy. But even that, I didn't even see foods that way. Like food gives you energy to do things. I was like, food is just like, there's good and there's bad. And one makes you like skinny. And like, that sounds bad to say, but I think a lot of us think that way. So that was a lot of just like, I kind of just rambled for a little bit, but I think in general, I just learned so much from you about how it is so like mental and how our relationship with food really stems from like how we view it.
Absolutely. And I think so many people think that too. Like I break that down with a lot of the people that I'm working with, that I think a lot of times nutrition in society is viewed through that lens, that like nutrition is to change my body. And like, mm-hmm. if I eat perfect, I will have a perfect body. And, you know, if it's so much more than that, because if you're stressed out, like the perfect body is not necessarily the one that you're the smallest in. Like mm-hmm. that doesn't mean that you're healthiest. Like right. you can't tell, you know, how healthy someone is by looking at them. They can right. really be struggling mentally and physically, but, you know, outward fit the mold of what society deems to be a perfect body. Right. And what you brought up about like, you know, viewing food as fuel, that's another big passion of mine too, because I think that a lot of times people view food as how can I eat as little as possible? Like, how can I eat just to like shut my hunger up and eat as little as possible and be mad at yourself, you know, when you eat more, and, you know, buy all these like diet, low calorie foods. And food gives us energy. Calories are energy. So when you're trying to eat as little as possible, you're not going to have the energy, the physical energy or the mental energy to focus on your day. Like so many people come to me and they're like, I spend so much of my day thinking about food, and they weren't even realizing it until, you know, we were chatting. And I'm like, think about all your day where you're like beating yourself up. Because as you know, like in the private practice platform I have, there's a food journal. And what I like about it is it's not calorie based. It's how you like what your hunger is before and after, how you're feeling, where you had it, you know, were you eating it like as you were walking on your commute or in your car or, you know, on the road when you were like doing a bunch of different things, or were you sitting down and eating? And I think people, like, I think when they're, you know, writing down their feelings about it afterwards, they, you know, realize that they're still thinking about the food, you know, 3 hours later, or they're always thinking about when their next meal is going to be because they haven't given themselves proper energy to begin with. So it's hard to focus when you're not fueled.
I'm a naturally like busy person, as you know. My instinct is just like run, do everything all the time. And I think that when I don't properly like sit down and eat meals and fuel my body, like I'll get to the place where I'm starving and I'm so hungry. And then I just like grab the closest thing because that's, you know, I didn't prep for it. I didn't think about it. And then I like grab the closest thing. And then I'm like mad at myself because I'm not only do I, in my head, I'm like, oh, that wasn't healthy, which by the way is subjective. And there's always, you know, you taught me how to really look at things like in a different way. But I also just like wouldn't feel good. And then you don't feel well. And you feel sluggish, and then you're like still running. And then at the end of the day, you're just like exhausted. And then you wake up and you don't, at least for me, like I don't really have the motivation in the morning to like move my body or like get up and have a productive day because I'm just like grabbing food as quickly as I can whenever I have a free moment. And it's not like food that's fueling me for the day. And then I put myself in this cycle where I'm just like tired and then repeating that cycle. And this happens to me a lot. And I mean, definitely like your program helped me see things differently. For example, like if I have a slice of pizza, I'm not like bad Sarah, like pizza's bad. I'm like, okay, like I had what, I don't want to give away all your secrets, but like I had a fat, a carb. And so then I try and like add in protein or add in something else. That really helped me a lot. But I definitely think like, I mean, so many people struggle with their relationship with food. And I think everyone just thinks that it's all I have to do is like eat vegetables and I will, like, I remember when I started your program, I was like, I need to eat vegetables, which is true. I wasn't eating enough vegetables, but it's kind of like, it's not just about vegetables. Like you, everything, there's a spectrum. It's everything. Like it's just about sitting down and like making time for food, A, and B, like not being so hard on yourself. I think I feel like I'm saying a lot of things right now, but I'm just like excited and I have a lot to say. But I think the point I'm trying to make is that like it's a whole relationship. Like food is a relationship and it's not a simple fix overnight. And I think it's something that we have to make time for. Because that will set us up for a whole cycle with sleep, moving our bodies, how productive we are at work. It like impacts everything.
And how we're viewing ourselves too. If you're always beating yourself up for what you're eating, like that impacts your relationship with yourself and your mental health. If you're like always getting down on yourself, like I'm not good enough, I'm not doing enough, I'm not eating healthy enough, I need to be exercising more, I should be doing this. Like you're just like, you're creating this negative spiral where you're, you know, beating yourself up, and that's going to make you feel worse too. You can't shame yourself into, you know, feeling better.
Right.
And I like my like perspective with nutrition is really all about like, what can we add? Because I think a lot of times nutrition is viewed as like, how can I eat as little as possible? I just need to eat veggies. Like, I can't eat this. I can't eat that. You know, these foods are bad. Where in reality, your body breaks everything down to the same three things. Like, right. It's a carb, it's a protein, and it's a fat. And a lot of the protein we eat gets turned into carbs as energy in our body because our body runs on carbs. So, you know, sure, there are obviously, you know, more nutrient dense foods. I'm not sitting here and saying that, you know, pizza is as nutrient dense as, you know, a salad with like chicken and sweet potatoes and all sorts of veggies, but there's room in your diet for all of it. Right. Because you, at the end of the day, like, I hate the phrase empty calories because calories are still usable energy in your body. Mm-hmm. Like, you can still use it. Not everything needs to be 100% perfect to be healthy.
Right. A lot of times people will think, well, if I just cut these certain foods out, then I will look a certain way. But we don't right. realize that if we cut those foods out, we're going to crave them so much more. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think like,
yeah,
when I started your program, I remember, again, I went into it thinking like, I'll need to cut all these foods out. And then I realized like, you can eat pizza and also add a salad and also add in as opposed to cutting out. And it makes you feel like you're not missing. Like, a huge problem for me was feeling like if I went on a diet or I did certain, ate healthy, I would have to let go of all these things. And then every time I was around it, I was like eating as much of it as I could because mm-hmm. I was like, I'm never going to see this food again, or I'm not allowed to have it.
So many people, I cannot tell you the amount of times that I hear, oh, I just can't keep this food in the house or I'll eat all of it. And I'm like, no, it's the opposite. You need to keep it in your house more so that it's not this like special thing that you're putting on a pedestal that controls right. you. You feel more in control about it. If it's like something that you can have on a random Tuesday, then you're right. not, you know, going to pound the whole sleeve of cookies if you can have, you know, a cookie with lunch on Wednesday.
Right.
It's like
right.
not that big a deal anymore.
Right. That's so true. I have a really quick question. This is like a side note, but it kind of goes back to what you said at the beginning. You were like, anxiety can really impact the way we digest foods. Like, is IBS mm-hmm. a real thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not trying, like, it's definitely a real thing. Because,
yeah. No, like, I've heard, and I'm not trying to like put you on the spot. I've heard people say like, IBS is just anxiety induced. And I'm like, I kind of believe that, but I don't know if it's true. Maybe I'll just cut this out because I don't want it to speak from like a doctor perspective if I'm...
Oh, no, it's fine. Like, I think that it does exist and people like have sensitivities that they can, you know, discover through like, you know, and they could have issues with certain foods. I'm not saying that, you know, everyone right. can digest all foods and like nobody has totally. Food allergies or sensitivities, but I have seen anxiety be a big trigger for IBS. Wow. So there's a big correlation there, and there are actually more neurotransmitters in your gut than are in your brain. So like serotonin, there's more serotonin receptors in your gut than are in your brain. So we're learning a lot more about the gut brain axis. Wow. But yeah, I mean, IBS definitely is a thing. I think some people say it's not a thing because it's a diagnosis of exclusion, meaning that it's like a sin. It's like, if you don't have this and you don't have this and you don't have this and you have this symptom, you have IBS. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a catch-all category. It's not like, and it's different in different people. Like if someone has Crohn's, like that's a diagnosable thing, or like celiac disease, like that's a diagnosed thing that looks, you know, pretty much the same in everyone who has celiac disease. But IBS is very different because it's, you know, kind of this collection of vague symptoms.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Thank you.
Yeah.
I always wondered because I definitely, and I know this isn't, there's more to IBS than just this, but I definitely go through periods where like I'm really bloated or like, as you were saying at the beginning, I have trouble digesting, and it usually is paired with times where I'm extra stressed. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, I definitely know in, you know, if I'm having trouble digesting, I know that those are times where I'm like, okay, let me ground down. Like even one of the sessions that we had during your nutrition program, which I will talk about until the end of the day. I remember you had a guest speaker on, and she started off by being like, let's just take a minute to breathe and like close our eyes and breathe for a second. And I'm a yoga teacher and I like forgot to do that. Like there was a period of my life where I forgot to do that, to just stop, check in with myself. Because even when I teach yoga, I'm running to the studio to help others do that, that I forget to do it myself. And I want to touch on intuitive eating and like I want to get your thoughts on it. But I think a big part of it is like, in order to assess how we're feeling, where we are, like hunger cues, you literally have to stop for a second and breathe and like kind of check in. Would you, is that fair?
100%. Like, and like it impacts our digestion too. If we're in fight or flight mode and we're like really stressed and like on edge and, you know, working through lunch and, you know, running, you know, eating while we're running around, it's going to impact our digestion because our fight or flight response is at odds with our rest and digest response. Mm. So they're two different parts of our nervous system, fight or flight, rest and digest. If you're really stressed and anxious and then you go to eat, it's going to impact your digestion because you're not in rest and digest mode. Versus if you activate, you know, your rest and digest mode just by breathing, like just by breathing and slowing down. It doesn't need to be crazy. It could be like the, like, I think with Kelsey, we did a 30-second check-in. It wasn't like, we didn't do like a whole lengthy, you know, 20-minute meditation and journaling. It was like literally 30 seconds. But it's crazy how you're supposed to do that.
Yeah. It literally changed everything for me. She was like, let's take a second to breathe. And when we were done, I was like, whoa. Like, I can't believe I haven't done that in like weeks. It was crazy.
Yeah.
So in order to get into like rest and digest, you would say like before eating, kind of take a second to sit, breathe. Like how, what would we do?
That can literally be it. Like you can take a few deep breaths. You can, if you have, you know, a smartwatch and they have like the breathe on it where it takes you through, it's literally a minute. So you can do that. Do a few deep breaths. You know, you can write down three things you're grateful for if you're feeling, you know, if you're feeling like you need a little more journaling space. You could go on a walk before, like not a power walk, like a short calm walk, just to like separate work into lunch. Yeah, it could be a lot of different things. I probably wouldn't recommend scrolling on Instagram. I feel like that usually makes us more anxious. But like maybe reading a book or something. But honestly, if you just, you know, took a few deep breaths before eating, I think that people would feel a lot better.
Wow. So what is intuitive eating? Because I think that people hear about it a lot and they're not really sure what it is.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of confusion about intuitive eating. I think a lot of times it gets boiled down to the hunger fullness diet, like eat when you're hungry, stop when you're full, and that's it. Or it gets boiled down to eat whatever you want. Nutrition doesn't matter. And both of those things are false. Like neither of those things are intuitive eating. There are elements of both of those within intuitive eating, but that is not what intuitive eating is. Intuitive eating was developed by a dietitian and it's, you know, a 10-step process to heal your relationship with food. And it starts with, you know, ditching diets and accepting all foods. So I think a lot of times that scares people because when they jump right into that, when they've come off a very restrictive diet and, you know, have a really poor relationship with food and they've been having a lot of restriction, jumping right in and saying all foods fit, like eat whatever you want, is very overwhelming because they can tend to swing in the other direction and feel really sick in doing so because they're not doing it with any direction. Now, a lot of times people do find success that even if they did swing to that direction, you know, that lasts for like a week or two and then they start to find the middle ground. I personally, I don't necessarily identify as an intuitive eating dietitian because I don't feel like I follow it, you know, strictly, you know, to the letter of what it is because it is like, and I, you know, a strict process. It's not, you know, just this like fluffy term that people throw around. But I do incorporate elements of intuitive eating in my practice 100%. I think it has really great philosophies and it's super helpful. But I do find it helpful to chat about nutrition as well. And not that nutrition isn't in intuitive eating, but it's the last principle of intuitive eating. So there's 10 mm-hmm. principles, and the last one is gentle nutrition. Like, what can we add into our diets, and like focusing on how foods make us feel. But I find that if I push that earlier in the process with my clients, then they don't have that same pendulum swing. Like, maybe they might have one or two episodes where they feel like they, you know, overdid it, you know, with a certain food that was a trigger food for them, but they don't feel like they're floundering. And like, I think a lot of people get turned off then when that pendulum swings totally in the other direction and they feel really crappy. So I find that if I like chat about like the basics of nutrition and give people the science and they understand why they're doing certain things and like how things get processed in your body, like what happens to your body when you eat a lot of carbs on your own versus if you had them in conjunction with our other macronutrients like protein and fat and added some fiber in there. And I find that that helps a lot of people to do it that way first. And then, of course, I think, you know, like you said too, like breathing and tuning in with how you're feeling, I think is so important because you can't figure out, you know, how food makes you feel if you're never checking in with yourself.
Right.
And like your hunger cues. I think a lot of people are disconnected to their hunger cues. They only eat when they're very, very hungry, and they only feel their fullness cues when they're very, very full. Mm-hmm. So like learning to like listen to and give into earlier hunger cues, because I think a lot of times we are taught to, especially as women, to push off our hunger, drink water, you know, chew gum, like you don't, like you can only eat like, you know, if it's, you know, you can't have lunch unless it's at least 12 and, you know, all these like random little rules and like, don't eat past 7, all these random rules stick in our head. And
everything you just said. Yeah. I'm guilty of everything you just said.
So is 99% of the people that, you know, I start working with, because it's so ingrained in us to be afraid of our hunger, essentially. Whereas when we talked about earlier, like calories are just energy. So when we're like ignoring our hunger and denying our body calories, we're just denying our body our like life substance to be energetic.
No, totally. I think that the reason why we're taught to push off our hunger is because a lot of people who struggle with this want to look like the beauty standard, right? The standard that society has like told us is what we should look like or need to look like. I think one of the things you said to me that like really resonated with me was you were like, looking a certain way, and you said it during this episode too, but looking a certain way doesn't mean you're performing at your best. And I think that there have been times in my life where like I've pushed off hunger cues, or I've ignored, I've done the gum, I've done the water to push off the hunger. And like, not only was I like kind of cranky, but I just like wasn't energized. I was anxious. Like I wasn't my best. And also I would go to restaurants and I would have like major anxiety with my friends because I was like, well, what am I going to eat? What am I going to do? How am I going to eat well? And like, I mean, an extreme of anything is like never, I think, in my opinion, like the best way to go. Like if you're so extreme that you're going to you're avoiding going out with your friends once in a while because you're scared of what you're going to eat at the restaurant. It's like, is that really the way to look the way you want to look? And I think like, personally, in my experience, like the times that I've felt my strongest and I felt the most energized, happier, more excited to go on with my day and get up and be productive at work and do things were times where like I was literally listening to my body and listening to my hunger cues and then fulfilling them with things that my body needed. And I think a lot of times people might feel like that's boring, like you have to eat boring foods for that to happen. But like you really showed me that you can find foods that you love, and like it doesn't, like for example, for me, I love pizza, yeah, but I also love tuna and I love sun-dried tomatoes and I love pesto and I love, there's also like these things that we don't even realize that we could be eating that are just as great. Like in my head, I'm like, yeah, healthy nutrition, it's like kale. But like, that's not the case, you know?
Totally. Yeah. And I think that a lot of times people, you know, go for the veggies only. And like you said, the boring things, whereas like adding things like pesto and dressings and olive oil and avocado to our veggies actually help boost the nutrition of the vegetables. Mm-hmm. It actually helps us absorb a lot of the vitamins and minerals that are in those vegetables, as well as, you know, fat helping other, you know, areas in our body and helping hormonal health and, you know, being great for our skin. And, but I think a lot of times people, you know, just want to eat as little as possible and like looking at food as the enemy versus, you know, something that can make us feel better. And also like what you were saying about, you know, going out to restaurants and like, you know, if that's what you need to do to, you know, if you need to, you know, restrict yourself so much that you can't do the things you enjoy and, you know, you're taking away all the joy that's in your life to look a certain way, like at what cost, right? Like at what cost are you pursuing that ideal body type?
Right.
Ideal in quotes, obviously.
And, And there can be a balance. Like I think people think it's either you're not eating anything or you're eating everything, but like there has to be a balance in between. Because if you're just eating everything, as you said, you're going to feel sick. You're not going to feel great. You might feel sluggish. Mm-hmm. So it really, it's like so wild how tied in food is to like our everyday lives and our overall like mental health well-being. So wild.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. Like mental health like plays in so many roles, like not just with like our anxieties around food or when someone has, you know, a poor relationship with food, but you know, if I work with a lot of people, you know, who have anxiety and when they're anxious, they don't eat. And then they end up, you know, binge eating later because they're so hungry, but they were so tense and they couldn't activate their rest and digest pathway. And they were so disconnected from their hunger cues that they didn't eat. And then they're eating a bunch later. And then it's creating, you know, this vicious cycle because they're eating a lot at night. They're not hungry in the morning. And then kind of the cycle continues or they're not dealing with their stress effectively. So they're constantly like having these periods of, you know, not eating and then being starving and eating a lot and, you know, not feeling their best. You know, and then when they're eating a lot, they're feeling sluggish and tired and don't want to go out and do things. And, you know, it's just keeping them, you know, keeping their mental health in a poor state.
Right. There are literally so many things I could touch on, right? Well, we could touch on right now. There's so much to say about food and mental health that it's actually like wild. I'm like, where, like, I want to just talk about it all. I think that something important to note is that there's no like perfect destination to nutrition. Like there's no like, okay, I'm there. I thought like another thing I thought was that once I did your nutrition program, that once I would be done, I would just like know everything. And therefore my actions would perfectly meet the knowledge that I just gained. But a lot of what we talked about was like, it takes work to change the neural pathways and like change the way you view food. And it's an ongoing practice and there's no, like, you don't wake up and everything's perfect. And I think it's more about finding peace with food and not seeing, as you said, seeing it as the enemy. Cause if, when you do that, every day is stressful because we have to eat every day. But I think when it starts to become less anxiety inducing and when you start to feel better from the food you're putting into your body is when you realize it's, I know this is going to sound so cliche, but it really is like a lifestyle change of like the way you view food as opposed to diet or I'm going to eat healthy now or those things that people say.
Absolutely. I could not agree more that it's, you know, and it's continually evolving. And I think also when we take away the judgment of it and we see it as information, like if something doesn't go the way that you intended it to, you know, what can you learn from it? What happened that you can trace back to why this happened, right? Like maybe you, you know, booked too many meetings back to back during lunch and, you know, then you didn't eat lunch and then it's been like 6 hours since you had breakfast and you were starving, or maybe you didn't eat enough at breakfast or you skipped breakfast or, you know, you were really stressed or you had been like inadvertently, you know, restricting a certain food. You know, that your body doesn't know the difference between intentional restriction or inadvertent restriction. So if you just, you know, ran out of, you know, carb options in your house and you were, you know, mostly having, you know, protein and veggies or, you know, lower carb things, and then, you know, you overate carbs later, it's because you hadn't given your body enough carbs.
Right.
And maybe it wasn't a conscious thing. Same thing with protein. Like maybe you, you know, maybe you didn't, you ran out of protein, you know, you didn't you didn't buy enough when you grocery shopped earlier in the week and you ran low and you were, you know, really hungry, you know, an hour or so after eating, instead of like beating yourself up and being mad and like, oh, I should have known that, I should have put more protein in, being like, oh, what happened? Okay. Like next time I go to the store, I need to make sure that I, you know, stock up on more frozen protein so that I always have something on hand.
Right. Right. I also think a big component of nutrition is finding your why. Like that's something you taught me, and my why going into the program was to lose weight, which I, like looking back was, I mean, I can't help myself because of the way society presents things to me. But like when that's your why, it's never going to end. Like the thing is, even if you reach the way you want to look, it never ends. It's constantly on your mind and you're keeping yourself in like a lifelong cycle of prioritizing how you look over how you feel.
100%. And a lot of people come to me and you know that is initially their why, or they recognize that it is their why, but they don't want it to be their focus anymore. Like I would say most people who come to work with me, like that is still either, you know, in the forefront or the back of their mind. And, you know, they're actively trying to move away from that, but it's still there. And what happens is most of the time it keeps you in this vicious cycle, because it's a lot of times when we want to lose weight, it's not the weight, right? It's that we want to be accepted by society, or we feel like it's going to, you know, make us more confident, or it's, you know, we're attributing these things to weight loss that, you know, we can work on in other areas of our, if we want to be more confident, you know, we can work on other areas of our life too. And it's just not a permanent solution, because a lot of times people will go into a diet as their why, like, you know, and why they're doing it is to lose weight. And like, I'm going to do this for, you know, 30 days or 60 days or, you know, 2 weeks, and I'm going to lose X amount of weight before the wedding, before a vacation, before this, before that. And it's not teaching them habits, because even if you did hit that goal weight for that event, if you're not actually changing your habits, you're going to go right back to what you were doing before you did that extreme thing. And it's all going to come back, and it's going to keep you in that cycle of being on a diet and off a diet, or on track and off track, and being good or bad. Versus, you know, I think it's so important to find your why, because do you want to feel good? You know, do you want to stop thinking about food all the time? You know, do you want to have more energy throughout the day? All of these things are lifelong things that are going to keep you in those new habits. And you can always ask yourself, like, are these habits that I'm forming, you know, pushing me towards the like bigger why? And if they're not, and if it's not something you can do forever, then we need to figure out how to change those, you know, the way of doing things to make sure it is sustainable.
I also want to touch on the fact that healthy food can really be seen and a lot of times is or can be expensive. I think that people think like they can only buy healthy foods from Whole Foods, or you have to go to these like really fancy places to get your kale, and that it's kind of there's like privilege that comes with eating well. And so I kind of want to touch on that. Like, you know, New York City, for example, is really expensive and not everyone can afford to go to Whole Foods every day for their groceries. So like, what would you say about someone who wants to be a little more conscious about that, but still, you know, incorporate good nutrition into their diet?
Yeah.
And by diet,
absolutely.
I mean everyday foods, not a diet.
Absolutely. Yeah. I definitely want to reclaim the word diet, because it's been co-opted by diet culture when it really just means what you're eating. But yeah, I feel super passionate about this, because I think a lot of times healthy eating gets this reputation of being really expensive, and you have to buy like all the fancy products and all the wellness things and all the powders and supplements and, you know, the greens powders and things like that, where in reality, you don't need any of that stuff to be healthy. And you can like things like beans and frozen vegetables. I think canned and frozen foods get such a bad rap when they're such a great affordable way to get in nutrition. And a lot of times help make healthy eating easier because they're always on hand. If you go grocery shopping and then, you know, randomly your friend wants to go out for dinner, but now you have all these groceries. If you have frozen veggies and canned foods, it doesn't matter. because they'll stay fresh week to week. So I think like you can be cognizant of cost by doing that. And I really feel like the stigma away like needs to go away from frozen and canned goods, because there's absolutely nothing wrong with those. And they can be a really great way to make things easier. I love frozen veggies because they're always on hand. They're, you know, already chopped for me, which is great. And buying pre-cut veggies are so expensive. So, you know, buying them frozen is great. If you're going to cook them anyway, who cares? And the other thing that you can do is buy in season. A lot of times seasonal produce is cheaper than out of season produce, and buying locally too. You know, that also can bring down the cost too. There's things like a lot of farms have CSAs at farmers markets. So, you know, you buy into a share and then every 2 weeks you get, you know, a share of their food, and it, you know, per week brings down groceries a lot. Sometimes it's harder in New York City, not to get it, but just like bringing it back to your, carrying it and all that, honestly.
Yeah.
But there's things like Misfits Market, which is this really cool company that takes all of the quote unquote ugly produce, like the stuff that won't sell on the shelves because, you know, the carrot's a little misshapen or like it's smaller or bigger than, you know, you would ordinarily see. And they sell it, you know, at a box at a discount, kind of similar to the CSA where you kind of, you can choose a little bit, but you mostly like, it's obviously a smaller selection than the grocery store. But I think, you know, I think all those options are great. And I've done, you know, a variety of all of those as well. Like I said earlier in the, you know, podcast that I went to grad school and I worked 3 jobs when I was in grad school, and it was, I was not, you know, buying like $8 crackers at Whole Foods in grad school. And I still felt like I could, you know, eat healthy. Oh, eggs are another great one. And you don't need to buy like Vital Farms eggs, not to call them out. Like they're great and they're a great company, but like they're like $9 eggs. You don't need to buy $9 eggs.
I'm very privileged enough to, I live next to Trader Joe's, and like everything is, well, not everything, but a lot of things are under $5, and it's just like, it's so nice. Like you buy something for $1.99 that at another place would be $10 or something. Okay, maybe not 10, but you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and it's,
yeah,
it's really, really helpful. I also think that like wellness companies kind of market themselves as, you know, bougie. And then it kind of gives people the impression that like wellness is only accessible to the wealthy. And like, no offense. I mean, not that Gwyneth Paltrow is ever going to listen to this podcast, but like,
oh my God,
that's funny. What's her Goop? Like I looked into Goop and I, that whole thing is just, whatever. I'm not trying to bash her. Like, I'm sorry if listeners like Goop, but it's just the whole thing is branded as like, we are rich and fancy and this is what wellness looks like. And I'm like,
it's insane. It's like $200 smoothies. Like who's doing that?
It's like eye mask, $2,000. And I'm like, okay, when I look at that, I'm like, well, then that's just not for, like, wellness must not be for me if that's the price to be healthy and to have like a wellness type lifestyle.
Totally. But, and I hate that because I think it brand self-care is being really expensive too, that like you need to do these like really expensive face masks and, you know, all, like this elaborate skincare routine and like self-care, you know, instead of self-care literally being like, you know, taking 3 breaths before your meal.
Like I think if anything, the key components, not that I'm the expert here, but from what I've learned, like if you're trying to improve your mental health when it comes to food, or even if you're just trying to improve your mental health, I think a component of it is eating, like putting nutritional foods into your body. I think a lot of times if someone's struggling with anxiety, it's like, okay, well, how are you eating? What are you eating? Are you eating? You know, to make sure you're eating.
Eating enough. I was just going to say that too, because I think a lot of times healthy eating is, what can I take out? Can I eat as little as possible? And I would say 75% of the people that I work with are not eating enough when we first start working together.
Wow. It's like everything I've learned is like incorporate more in terms of like vegetables, produce, things that are nutritional. Don't cut out, just add those things in. Like leave room on your plate for those things too. And then also just like sleep and breathe. Like, you know, we like underestimate the power of breathing and sleeping. I remember there was a period of time where I was like not sleeping when we did the nutritional program, and it was impacting everything. Like my hunger were off. My mental health was really in a bad place. And all I needed to do was tell myself, go to sleep tonight at 10 or 10:30. And then I did that for a week and I felt like a completely new person. It's crazy.
Totally. I think people underestimate the basics all the time. Like people, you know, when we're talking about movement, like, well, I just go on walks. I'm like, take away the just. Like walking is great for your body. It's great for your mental health. You know, you don't need to be doing HIIT workouts every day to be healthy. Like you don't need to be going to $40 workout classes to be healthy. You can go on a walk and be healthy.
And those things are like super intimidating. Like if you think the only way to be healthy is by doing HIIT workouts, you're just not even going to move at all.
Totally. And that's obviously so much worse.
Okay. I just want to touch on one more thing because this is something I personally struggled with and I'm still working on, but I think obviously a big part of everything we're talking about is, you know, retraining your brain to think in a new way about this. But that can be really difficult when we are overloaded with messages from other people and society and Instagram. Even like my own family members have like really outdated views of food. And I would eat I would have friends that would say really outdated views of food, or like, you know, one time I was eating olives and the fat count on the olives were really high. And I was like, oh my God, I can only eat like 5 olives, which is like, it's like weird that I was so strict about olives. Like it felt wrong.
Yeah, you could have, right. We need more fat. I think a lot of times women are, you know, their health is suffering because we're not getting enough fat for our hormones.
Right. So how do we, like, to just wrap this up, like how do our listeners and how do I and how do you and how do we all kind of stay away from listening to what we're hearing right now and like what we're seeing and really trust our own intuition about what makes us feel energized and good and like sticking with that as opposed to looking up what someone else's What I Eat in a Day video says and then trying to replicate what's good for them.
Oh my God, I hate What I Eat in a Day videos. We can have a whole podcast of why I hate those. but I think that's honestly the number one reason why I went into being a dietitian and why I have my one-on-one and group programs, is because I think it's really hard to tune out that noise if you don't feel confident in how to fuel yourself. And since there are so many, you know, different messages out there, people don't know how to tune into their own bodies and like what works for them. And it is different person to person and day to day. And I think I really teach people how to eat, not necessarily what to eat. Like, yes, obviously we touch on nutrition because it's a science, but it's really focused on the how and the why and, you know, really getting people to listen to me less and listen to themselves more. So I think like getting really solid in how food makes you feel. I think, you know, I have all of my clients do this, you know, before we start working together. And I think it's a great exercise for anyone to do is to, you know, do a food diary for 5 to 7 days and don't do it on MyFitnessPal, no calories here. Like write it in a notebook or a note on your phone, write down the times you're eating, how you feel before and after your meals, hunger wise, but also mood wise, and kind of start to see patterns and like write down any thoughts you were having about the food. Like, did you feel guilty after eating a certain food? You know, did you have, you know, some thoughts that you shouldn't have had what you had? And I think that can be really eye opening to see how you're eating and how you're feeling throughout the day, because I think a lot of times we just go on autopilot. We're not even listening to our bodies and how food is making us feel, or we might not even realize that food can impact how we're feeling, you know? So I think, you know, bringing awareness, I think, is the first step. The other thing I think is really helpful, and I actually, if listeners go to my Instagram now, it's a link, my link in my bio right now is a free guide for challenging your negative food thoughts. And I think that's a really helpful first step as well, because the first part of the guide has you write down where these negative food thoughts are coming from, like what foods do you feel like are bad, quote unquote? Why do you think that is? Where is that coming from? Like, where are you getting your nutrition knowledge from? You know, what kind of messages are you telling yourself before you eat? And where do you feel like they came from? Where did they start? You know, was it family? Was it friends? Was it the internet? And it's probably some combination of all of the above, But I think recognizing that, you know, I'm not eating this food because some influencer I'm following, you know, said this is bad, kind of also brings awareness to, okay, like, am I trusting the source? Is this who I want to trust with my, you know, nutrition knowledge? And then, you know, it has another section on there on how to reframe it. So, you know, if you're thinking carbs are bad, you know, carbs give me energy. Carbs fuel me. Carbs make me happy, you know, whatever. It obviously needs to be authentic to you. But I think recognizing where they come from, you know, and challenging those thoughts by reframing them is a good place to start.
That's awesome. Definitely going to check that out. Danielle, thank you so much for being here. Always love talking to you. Please tell the listeners where they can find you. And are you doing any like programs coming up that someone could sign up for? Tell us about
that. Yeah. So I'm pretty active on Instagram. So you can definitely find me on there. Shoot me a DM. You know, I also have an email list where I send out weekly emails. So you can get on that too and hear a little bit more in depth than, you know, what I can do in like a short Instagram caption. And then people can work with me either one-on-one or with my group program, which is kind of on a rolling basis whenever, you know, we fill it up. So I'm trying to do them at least quarterly, but kind of depends on interest, who wants to do individual versus group program. But yeah, definitely say hi on Instagram, DM me. And, you know, even if you just listen to the podcast and want to say hi, I always love chatting with people.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Danielle really has the best Instagram. Like I always, you're so good at your content and because it's so relatable and true. So thank you so much. And thank you for being here. Really, I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Sarah.
Bye. Good to talk. So that was my episode with Danielle, aka Redefining Healthy on Instagram. She's incredible, as you heard, and this was a really good one. So, you know, if you made it this far, thanks for being here, and I hope to continue spreading positivity and, you know, speaking out about mental health because I think it's important. And again, my name is Sarah. I appreciate you, and you can find me on Instagram at Sarah L. Sassone. That's N like Nancy. You can find the podcast Instagram at It's Fine, I'm Fine Pod. I also have a website. You can reach out on there. You can see old episodes on there. I also have a TikTok, which more to come on that. So anyways, thanks again, and I'll see you next time. Bye.